Hey everyone, it's Daisha. You are about to hear a very special episode of Classical Classroom, not only because, like, Itzhak Perlman is in it, which I mean, wow, but also because my friend and colleague Maggie Malloy is Classical Classroom's very first guest host. Yay!
Yay!
So this came to be because we got the opportunity to interview Mr. Perlman on a day when I was indisposed.
You were lost in the woods.
Maggie. Dude, we were not going to talk about
Sorry.
This. Yes, okay. So the cat's out of the bag. I was lost in the woods. There was a bear. I had to sail down a river in a canoe that I crafted out of some sticks to safety. I survived on berries and twigs for days. But anyway, Maggie here valiantly stepped in to do the interview. She was like, I can't let this interview not be done. Maggie, say hello.
Hey.
Hey, Maggie. So, you know, I was going to ask you what surprised you about the interview. Was there anything that really stood out to you personally?
One of the really crazy things that I found out is that even though Itzhak Perlman is, like, the most famous violinist, he's actually never performed in a masterclass as a student. Like, he has taught several masterclasses all over the globe, but he has never actually been a student performing in a masterclass.
Wow.
He was just born an amazing violinist.
That's crazy. And, like, did he, I mean, I would assume that the reason he has never done a masterclass is because he was just like, I'm good. I do not need your
I'm fine, thanks.
Your earthlings classes. but did he actually give any explanation for why?
Well, he did mention that it can be very nerve-wracking to perform as a violinist in a masterclass in front of all these other students and audience members getting, you know, critiqued by a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that had something to do with it.
Huh.
Or maybe he was just already too good.
One will never know, because Itzhak Perlman is also an interview ninja and did not answer your question directly. But I'll just assume it was because he was just good without it. But anyway, Maggie, thank you again for stepping in to do the interview. And you're a gentleman and a scholar.
Thank you, Daisha.
All right. If you're not already doing it, subscribe to, rate, and review us wherever you listen. It is scientifically proven to create better digestion, I swear. And now on with the show. There's a rumor going around that classical music can be hoity-toity. But here in the Classical Classroom, we beg to differ.
Beethoven 5.
The idea that classical music is a zone where we have to feel restricted or we have to act in a certain way, you know, that's not going to be helpful going forward.
Isaiah is shaking with excitement.
Oh, I mean, there's just so many great parts of the opera.
He asked me to play his favorite spot in the first movement of the Brahms. And then he said, I started using those licks in my guitar solos.
How to be classical music rock stars, because there's not enough of that in this business.
Occasionally, I would plug in the mandolin to my distortion pedals.
I don't change my voice.
And talking to classical
music. I'm playing classical music now. I mean, it's the same 12 notes. That's what's so cool about it.
I'm Daisha Clay, a classical music newbie, and I'm trying to learn all I can about the music. Come learn with me and the classical music experts I invite into the Classical Classroom.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Maggie Malloy, filling in for Daisha Clay, and with us today is Itzhak Perlman, a true superstar violinist. He's performed as a soloist with countless top orchestras around the globe, racked up 16 Grammy Awards, 4 Emmy Awards, and a Presidential Medal of Freedom. And when he's not busy doing all that, he's even carved out some time for teaching. Today, this master violinist is going to teach us about the role of the master class in classical music. He's joining us from the Carnegie Hall Studios in New York City. Maestro Perlman, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. You know, you're really one of those few classical musicians who even people outside the classical music realm know by name. But even kind of off the stage, you do a lot of work behind the scenes in the realm of education. Could you tell me a little bit about your experiences as a music educator at the Juilliard School and through the Perlman Music Program?
Well, I started to teach quite early on, you know. I find teaching is to be extremely important for any performing artist. And I found that teaching for me was very helpful in my performance. So I started to teach at the Juilliard School, I don't even remember how long ago, quite a few years ago. And my wife, who started the Perlman Music Program, 25 years ago, roped me, so to speak, into teaching at the Perlman Music Program. So I've been teaching there ever since, basically the violin as well as conducting the orchestra and so on.
So in classical music, beyond just regular violin lessons, there's also this thing called a master class, which is sort of between your normal lessons and performances. What is a master class? Why is it important in classical music?
Well, it's a kind of a little bit of a fancy name. You know, they said it's a class given by a master. It's basically, a class that is given by a teacher for more than one person. You know, I mean, usually, you put the... I would call it the victim who's playing for the teacher in front of a big audience. And then the teacher is supposed to miraculously make this person play instead of playing sort of normally, to play really amazingly well. That doesn't always work, obviously. The only thing that you can hope from master class is to give somebody a different outlook on what they're doing and hopefully make them be more aware and inspire them to do certain things that they were not aware of before. So that to explain certain things, and there is nothing. No masterclass is the same. And then when you hear somebody play, you can focus on certain things that they do, whether it's intonation or whether it's phrasing, or whether it's color, whether it's just a general way of playing and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And so then the audience can learn too from watching the lesson.
Well, hopefully, in other words, there's always the hope that they will grab onto something that they did not know before and understand, a different aspect of violin playing or piano playing or whichever masterclass you are giving. Yeah.
And so masterclasses could also have like visiting artists who are, somebody that the students don't normally work with on a regular basis?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They would have somebody, let's say at the Juilliard School, they would have a guest who is coming in from abroad, whatever it is, and who has been quite known as a teacher, let's say in Europe and so on. Then they come to the States, and then there's some students that are chosen to play for them, and they do that as a master class. Yes.
Yeah. Have you conducted a lot of master classes in your travels as a performer?
Yes, quite a few. It's always an interesting challenge. Because you want to make sure that the person that plays for you has some sort of a support from you, as well as getting some help with certain problems. And as I said before, it's not always the same problem of playing. You know, that it can be one thing or another, whether it's, as I said, whether it's working on tone, whether it's working on the particular piece itself, and so on and so forth. So you just hope that you can help. But a lot of the master classes is, under the best circumstances, you want to give the person that plays for you help, as well as making sure that the audience who listens to that class understands what you're talking about, that it's not so technical that you need to be a performing instrumentalist to understand what the teacher is telling you. So mm-hmm. you need to establish those two things, so that it's helpful for both, for the person that plays for you as well as for the audience.
Well, could you tell us about a masterclass that you attended as a young violinist that had a big effect on the way that you played?
I actually never attended a masterclass. In other words, that I played for. You know, I always did my playing for. If I wanted to play for a guest artist and so on, I did it without the audience. I just did it to play for them and listen to what they had to say. So I personally never did it.
Wow, that's pretty unusual.
Well, it's all the question of having the opportunity. You know, when somebody comes in, for example, and I always prefer that, why get so nervous? You know, when you play in a master class, not only are you nervous because you're playing in front of, let's say, 200, 300, 500, no, the people. the people, you know, the audience. So that's your first reason to be a little bit nervous. And then you're playing for somebody that hopefully you respect. So, you know, you have double nervous. You know, I always admire people who put themselves in a situation of a masterclass. I admire them, you know, but I think in retrospect, it can be very profitable as far as gaining some knowledge into what your quote master thinks about specific things that you do.
So recently you've partnered with an online platform called Masterclass, which kind of adapts this type of study for modern audiences using online videos. Could you tell us a bit about your online masterclass and how it's different from a traditional masterclass?
The masterclass we are talking about that I've just done, I basically talk to the camera about my feelings and my, and I share with whoever wants to watch it. I share what I feel about aspects of violin playing. You know, and there are many, you know, violin is not a simple instrument. There's a lot of stuff that involves in order for you to really make a good sound, for example. To start with, you know, you can simplify everything, but in the long run, it's not as simple as some instruments. For example, if I were to compare the violin to a piano, now I'm not going to tell you that the piano is easier to play, but it's easier to make a sound to begin with by just pressing the key, and you have a mechanical thing in the piano that basically has the hammer hitting the string, and you make a sound. You see, but the thing is, on the violin, that's not automatic like that, you know, because you have to put the bow just the right way on the string. You have to pull the bow the right way. You have to press it the right way. Then you have to put your other hand on the fingerboard of the violin where you basically produce the notes and so on. So everything there is more manual. You know, it's not some automatic thing that the pianists have, at least just producing a simple sound. Afterwards, everything gets difficult. But to begin with, it's a little more complicated in the violin. So you have to do a lot of preparation and practicing just to produce a good sound.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're teaching students in this class, you know, of all different ages and abilities, where do you start with this class?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's a real challenge, because you cannot just assume that they know what you're talking about. So when you start from scratch, that means that you have to talk about, basically holding the violin. You know, what do you do about holding the violin, under your chin? And so on. So that sometimes is very, very difficult to hold the violin and just to hold it straight, you know, not to hold it too high, not to hold it too low. And then to study the bow grip, you know, how do you grip the bow? And that's really very important, because when you study a good bow grip at a young age, it stays with you forever. You know, if you study it wrong, and you play it, let's say you play it like that for 3, 4, 5 years, then it's difficult to change it. So whatever you study at the young age, if it's right, then it will be with you, and it will just make your life easier, as opposed to, you know, oh, I've been playing this whole thing wrong all the time, now I have to change it. It's just that, you know, this is a general statement, you know, whatever you study as a young person, you actually get it very quickly. And so the getting it is very important. Like, for example, I'll give you an interesting example. Let's say you play a piece, you know, when you are like 5, 6, 7 years old, and there is one note in that piece that's always a little sharp, and you don't bother fixing it. You know, it's just there. For some reason, it was ignored, you know, and anyway. So you play that sharp, and that's it. Now, take the scenario of, let's say, you put that piece to rest, you know, and you haven't played it in a while. Now, 10 years later, you said, I want to play this piece again. Believe it or not, that one sharp note that you played at the age of 7 will return, and it will be sharp, and then you will have to fix it. Because our brain, you know, it's like, I always like to call our brains like Xerox machines, you know, copy machines. You know, whatever mm-hmm. we do at a young age stays with us. And that's why I'm saying that whatever you do at a young age, if it's right, it will stay with you. And if it's wrong, it will also stay with you. And you'll just have more of a challenge to fix it at a later date.
Yeah, the muscle memory is already...
Yeah. Oh, it's automatic. It's amazing. It's really automatic. And, you know, I do it with my, you know, I find it with myself. You know, sometimes I played something when I was like 10 years old. And there were a couple of things that I would always do, whether it was a particular... getting maybe slower or faster or maybe slightly sharper, whatever it is, they stay with you. And I have to specifically fix it, because automatically it will be like it was, you know, years ago. It's like a miracle. It's amazing how our brains work. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, it's Daisha just butting in to say a little word from our sponsor. This episode of Classical Classroom is sponsored by Maestro Classics, creators of Stories and Music. It's a recorded series they made for kids and families, and it's won more than 50 awards, not to mention general adoration from the people who listen to it. It features a London Philharmonic Orchestra, and it takes musical stories and brings them to life. It's one of those things where kids learn while they're having fun without realizing it, like when you hide spinach in their cereal. Is that what parents do? I'm not actually sure. There's an activity book that goes along with it. It's a whole thing. Maestro Classics just announced a brand new recording in this series called Bach and the Organ. It's all about J.S. Bach, who was a musician, I believe, and it tells the story of his life while talking about the pipe organ, which back in the day was the most advanced mechanical instrument that had ever existed. Learn more about this album and the rest of the series at maestroclassics.com and save 17% off your order by using coupon code CLASSROOM. Now back to Maggie Malloy's chat with Itzhak Perlman.
So one of the distinctions kind of with this masterclass, I mean, in a normal masterclass, you would listen to individual students and give them kind of individualized feedback. How do you recreate that element in an online medium?
Well, in this masterclass, we also have a section where I have a number of my students sitting in the studio, and we talk about various aspects of music. We talk about what makes music exciting. We talk about what makes music sound relaxed, what mm-hmm. makes music sound intense, and everybody talks. We also talk, I think, a little bit about nerves in performance and so on. So I share with the audience experiences of those students that play for me and so on, and we discuss it. So it's very interesting to listen to what, for me anyway, to you know, the different experiences that the students have in various aspects. You know, I mean, a lot of these kids are very talented, you know, they're all very talented. And so they've had experiences in playing concerts, and it's always fun to ask, you know, what was something that you experienced that you did not expect, you know, and then how did you react to it and so on. And it's always very interesting to hear how they react, because everybody has different reactions to things that happen, whether you have a memory slip or whether you have something that a particularly intense experience of being nervous and so on. It's always very you know, very interesting to hear different way that they actually react to it and how they solve those problems. And sometimes they have a question for me as, how does one solve the problem? And then we discuss that as well. So there is some interesting aspects of the class where it includes other talented fiddle players and they talk about their experiences.
Yeah, so the student perspective is still very present in this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
One of the other kind of funny things I noticed about this is that, you know, this online masterclass really puts classical music in a context where you don't typically see it. I mean, masterclass series also offers classes by Christina Aguilera and Serena Williams, Martin Scorsese.
Right.
What is the common thread in this series?
Well, we are all in trying to share what we do and what we do best with an audience that, you know, of different interests, you know. I mean, the thing is that I'm not pretending to share what I have to share with somebody who is on a different level. Everybody can get what they can get depending on their level, you know, and whatever, you know, and there are some things in the class which are very basic. Now, what's in common with me and you know, Serena Williams? Well, we are all athletes. To be a tennis player, you have to be an athlete. And to be a musician, to be a performing artist, you have to be an athlete. It's an athletic activity, you know, and you have to figure out how to pace yourself when it comes to playing something with great intensity and so on. And I'm sure that there are many, many parallels between this and between, let's say, playing tennis as to how you pace yourself. Well, you're talking about the bow grip, then you're talking about a tennis racket grip, you know, where you study that from the very beginning, you know. And that's always, when you study something that's good, you know, it's always nicer if you have that grip and you don't have to change it. You know, but, you know, sometimes, you know, when you have different tennis teachers, you know, each one has their own kind of particular grip of the racket that they use. You know, we talk about the two-handed grip, a single-handed grip, and so on. Well, in what I, for example, my example of my bow grip is that I had, when I first started, was a Russian bow grip, which I demonstrate in the class, where it has the wrists a little higher than the grip that I'm using right now, which is the Franco-Belgian grip, which has a different way that the wrist is positioned on the bow stick, and so on. Of course, there are some great players, you know, whether it's in tennis or whether it's in baseball or whatever it is, that do things which are, quote, not the accepted way of doing it, but because they're so great, it works for them anyway. That's one of the dangers, you know. You can't say just, but Mr. So-and-so is doing it like that. Well, Mr. So-and-so is very talented, and he can get away with it. But sometimes, you know, sometimes you hear of kids who are doing things, and they're the way that they stand in the violin is not correct, and then they get into trouble. So it's always nice to have something that makes sense.
Well, what do you think that, you know, non-violinists or even maybe non-musicians could learn from your masterclass?
Well, they could have a certain idea as to what is involved in playing an instrument. You know how simple it is or not simple it is. You know, it's what goes into it. You know, we talk also about careers. We talk about getting a violin. What is, you know, one of the challenges of getting a fine instrument, which is something that did not used to be as challenging as it is right now, because the, you know, price of instruments has just gone through the roof. And so what do students now do with obtaining a fine instrument, you know? And it's more of a challenge. So it might be interesting to know about that. But of course, just sharing what is involved in a beautiful tone, what mechanical things are involved in playing the instrument, is always a lot of fun to hear. And especially for somebody that does not have really experience, you know, you will have something that is new, which is, you know, which is wonderful, you know, rather than just listening to somebody and not really knowing what, you know, what involves in producing the sound that you like.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of music, we talk about kind of abstract terms like tone or color.
Exactly.
That, you know, what is the mechanics behind producing a beautiful color and sound?
Well, after all of this, it's very interesting that you mentioned that, because certain things in music, you know, one of my teachers used to say, you know, Dorothy DeLay, she thought that you could teach anything. And I agreed with her up to a point. And the point is, whether it's in pop music or whether it's in sports. You can teach anything, but the final 2% of greatness, you cannot teach. And I'm always confronted by listening to somebody that I think is absolutely incredible. And I'm trying to figure out what makes this person incredible, and I just cannot. And it's kind of nice to have a little mystery in what we're doing. You know, not to be able to explain every single detail as to what, but there's always that little thing that when a person plays, it just moves everybody to tears and they don't know what it is. You can analyze, as I said, you can analyze 98, 99%, but that 1% you cannot analyze because that's called talent and greatness. More of just inexplicable. And so that's what we're faced with. But the 99% is, you know, you'll understand in the class. Hopefully we'll touch on many, many things. We are touching on many, many things that might interest people.
Have you learned anything from putting together this class?
Well, I have been teaching for many, many years. And so I just reiterated what I was teaching all along, you know. So what I can say to you is that I learn a lot from teaching and talking about what I'm talking in the class. I learned a lot, and I apply it to when I play the instrument, when I play my violin. It's, you know, so I skip the middleman, you know. I'm an automatic teacher as I play, which is nice. You know, I can all of a sudden hear music in a different way because I'm so busy analyzing what goes on and so on.
Mm-hmm. If students take away one thing from you in this masterclass, what do you want that to be?
Well, I want them to not be frightened of the process. I also believe, and I hope that they would understand that to be a teacher and to teach somebody, you don't have to be mean and you don't have to be aggressive and so critical to make the student feel bad. The policy here, the philosophy here, is to help the student and then to be nice and to be supportive. That's what we do at the Perelman Music Program. It is to, you know, just you, whatever happens, if somebody plays really horribly, there's always something that you can say that's positive. Always something. You can say, oh, that sounded, oh, very interesting. You know, your sound in that particular place was actually wonderful, but we can try and improve on something else and so on. That's I always believe in positiveness so that you feel that you're being helped rather than hit across the head with something saying, oh, you know, that's, you know, that really horrible. You know, what do you think you're doing? You know, we don't have that. You know, we don't want to do that. And that's, and I don't do that in the masterclass. I talk about things in a way that hopefully is constructive.
Yeah. And that kind of, you know, ties into the larger issue of like accessibility in classical music. And, you know, a lot of people have preconceptions about like what a masterclass might be like, or, you know, the style of study to learn such a traditional art form. What do you think are kind of the implications of making these masterclasses available to a wider digital audience? I mean, not all these people could go to an Itzhak Perelman masterclass in person, but now they can online.
Well, I think that you shouldn't, you know, you should try it. You might like it. You know, I mean, it's, I think the class is not that so exclusively technical. It is when it needs to be, but I'm trying to explain things in a very simple way and in a very logical way. If you're interested in classical music, and if you're interested in the violin as a instrument that you like to hear, this class would just give you a nice insight. If you're a fiddle player, maybe certain aspect of the class may help you. excuse me. You know, because I talk about a lot of technical aspects, which apply to people of different levels, and so on. So you have to figure it out. But I'm just hoping that I'm sharing my own experiences in what I feel works for me. And I think that it might be just a lot of fun, if just like a knowledge, why do you want to study in school? You know, when you study in school, when you study history, and when you study math, and when you study science, and so on, not every person that studies history is going to be a historian, and not every person that studies math is going to be a mathematician. And it's the same thing with music. You know, not every person that listens to a masterclass is going to be a violin virtuoso, but it's part of education, and it's extremely interesting. And some people are even going to, you know, who are older, who've never done it before. I've had so many experiences where people are approaching me and saying, you know, what should I do about this? I just started to play the violin. I said, how old are you? And they said, well, I'm 55, and so on. So always very difficult to start something like that at an older age. So especially these days, you know, people start to play the violin when they're two sometimes. So
right.
It's fun. You know, it's fun. And as I said, it would for certain people, it might even be very support. You know, it might help them if they play a certain level of violin, certain things. You know, all, like I say in the class, all I need is for one aspect of what I said to work somebody, then I think this class has succeeded. We don't need everybody to work to follow everything, but if they get one little thing about, oh, I had no idea that if you do this with the bow, I'll get a better sound. If they can get that, then I've accomplished something. That's all I'm thinking about.
Well, thank you so much, Maestro Perlman, for taking the time to teach us today about the masterclass.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I wish you good luck and happy practicing, and very important, practice slowly. For those of you who want to start to it, practicing slowly is the most important thing. So that's I'm leaving you with that.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
All right, everyone. That's it for this episode. For more Classroom, go to classicalclassroomshow.com, where you can find a veritable treasure trove of show-related things. Thanks to the home of Classical Classroom, King FM, where all of the furniture and the employees are from IKEA. Thanks to the birthplace of Classical Classroom, Houston Public Media. Thanks to Maggie Malloy for guest hosting this episode. Ahoy, Malloy! Thanks to Itzhak Perlman for being on the show. Thanks to our official ramen noodle provider, Ramona's Rare Ramens, with flavors like eel bum and teriyaki strawberry. Mmm, yummy. Thanks to me for saying words, but most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.